going on out there, friends. And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, right here next to me, ready to rock and roll today, Mr. Filio Kyle Filsa.
How's it going? Yes, that's me, the Bino Bandit. I'm in studio, ready to do another episode. Yeah, man, I'm doing good. I got a large big gulp here. It's not really a big gulp, but the same thing. A large fountain drink. I stopped at the local convenience store.
Going hard on the caffeine and this, you know what? Mm-hmm. That looks really good. I just had a fizzy water.
Big fizzy?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, I'm normally in the big fizzy stuff. And if the people are like, hey, I thought you quit drinking soda. I cut back on soda. Let's not get ridiculous.
You got to treat yourself every now and again.
I got to totally give it up. But, you know, you can't be knocking back 8 Dr. Peppers a day. That ain't no good for you either.
No.
I usually have like one every other day.
That's, you know what?
Usually in the mornings, I'm drinking coffee.
Yeah.
And, of course, this time of year, my wife likes to break out all the crazy coffee flavors, and she always picks on me because I just like it just plain, like, I don't know, Ethiopian dark roast. Like, I'm very plain. And she gets all the different flavors. She goes and orders these syrups. She's got these whipped cream. I mean, it's like Starbucks at my house in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I mean, she makes all these fancy drinks. I don't need it. Just pour me some coffee.
Do you like creamer or milk?
I prefer creamer.
See, I like a little milk more than any, if I got to do it, or maybe even like just a little half and half, but I'm not a fan of, well, I say I'm not a fan. I haven't found a flavor, coffee flavor that I'm sold on. You know, that I like that. I want to have it every time.
Yeah.
Because I like coffee flavor.
I do too.
But I like just and when I say a splash, I mean like just a splash of just a little bit to knock that sharp bitterness at the end of the coffee, like when you take a drink off.
Other
than that, that's all I want. I just like it just the way it is.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of coffee. In fact, I wish we'd get sponsored by like Black Rifle Coffee or something like that. That would be awesome.
Dude, I would love to have some kind of coffee sponsorship because of course, you know what? I don't remember it being a thing like it is now.
I don't know. I know when I was a kid, I didn't care for coffee.
Well, I used to, my grandparents and yours as well, all day.
Yeah.
And you think about it, that was like their drink because they didn't really have a lot of other drinks.
My dad's the same way now. My dad drinks coffee all day.
The pop. Going hard.
He's religious
coffee.
About it. I can't, like, I'm good in the mornings, but like after like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, if I have a cup of coffee, dude, good luck going to bed that night.
Get you fired up.
I toss and turn. I'm the same thing with Dr. Pepper. If I drink Dr. Pepper like after 7 p.m., I'm not falling asleep.
See, it doesn't affect me like that. I don't have anything because I'll have a coffee in the evenings sometime.
And
sit down and just have a nice little.
Another thing that interferes with my sleep is when I get to binge watch things on like Netflix.
Oh,
like recently I've been watching the World War II in Color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic series, especially if you're into history. I like how, and I know this happens to a lot of people, but especially me, is like you think you know the way things went. Mm-hmm. Like you learned about it long ago and then you kind of forget. Because Caleb, one of my sons, was telling me about how the bombing of Pearl Harbor, that actually we sunk a Japanese submarine earlier that morning before the attack. So actually we carried out the first attack on Japan, not the other way around. I was like, what are you talking about? I didn't learn that. Your teacher must be off his rock or whatever. Sure enough, I'm watching the Netflix series. That's exactly what happened. I'm like, I don't remember that. Did I know it and then just forgot it? Or did no one teach me that? So here I am walking around thinking I know exactly the way it went. Nope. And I think it's like that with a lot of people. Is
you
like
especially.
You think, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm guilty of it. When something doesn't work, it's always me. It's on me. If I don't remember something, it's on me. That's what's so poor about people's memory.
Yeah.
Is you forget stuff and then you convince yourself that you know what, no, I know what happened. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. No, you don't. You're wrong. Anyways, it's a fantastic series. And what else was I watching? Oh, one of our listeners, Kevy Kev, big shout outs, big ups. He recommended a movie and me and my wife watched it together the other day. It's called Midsommar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty good.
It's a disturbing film.
Very disturbing. It reminds me of like kind of like The Wicker Man.
Yes.
With Nicolas Cage. It was like one of those deals.
There's Heredity is also the director's first film.
Oh, that makes sense.
And I believe it's on Amazon Prime right now. So if you want to watch it, it's disturbing as well because he told me, check these two out. And now I regret checking those two out.
I don't regret it. I thought it was really good. As far as like a lot of the terrible horror movies I'm roped into watching, this one was actually pretty good one.
I got
thriller.
A question
it wasn't
for
really
you.
A horror movie, but yeah.
What's your take or how much do you enjoy The Mandalorian?
I love it. Yeah, we signed up for Disney Plus app.
Just for The Mandalorian.
I did, but Luke wanted, of course, for all the Disney movies. But yeah, man, it's really cool. We signed up for it a couple days before it launched. And he's pretty much been watching Disney Plus all week. I mean, for everything from all the Pixar movies to the Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. I know when I left the house yesterday morning, they were already up and watching Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Luke really likes that series. Now, and they were watching classics like Lady and the Tramp and things like that. Yeah.
You and I discussed this. It might have been yesterday, actually, where at first we both were complaining and then we realized that we were spoiled and that we come to realize that we kind of like the nostalgia of the fact of them not releasing the entire Mandalorian series.
Yeah.
Both of us were kind of like spoiled kids. We're like, man, I want to see the whole thing. And then you and I both were like, but wait a minute. I think it makes it more fun when I have to wait like this to get it.
Well, it makes each episode when it drops a little bit more exciting, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I didn't complain about Game of Thrones. Yeah. I knew the way it was. I guess because it being a streaming, in air quote, streaming service, I was expecting it to be all in one pile. And I'm glad to have something to look forward to.
You're thinking of the Netflix model.
Yes, yeah. That's exact. And they've spoiled me.
They've spoiled you.
They've spoiled me completely. Well, and the same thing as Amazon, because I saw that The Man in the High Castle's final season dropped, and I'm going to have to go check that out now.
It did? When did that come out?
Friday, I believe.
Oh, that's it. There goes the rest of my week. See? No sleep.
Yeah, right. There it is. I'm glad they, yeah, part of me wishes I could, but I'm kind of glad that they've done it this way so I can have something to look forward to. Because everything about The Mandalorian, I'm so excited about. Because I know that they're going to continue to do these series in a universe that I personally love.
Right, yeah. No, it's pretty cool. Because especially because the last Skywalker movie's coming out.
Yes.
In like a month.
Yes.
And then that's going to be done, right? And then I have to start going, I don't know if they're going to be doing prequels or just series on their own.
I think there's going to be spinoffs of different lineages, but I believe the Skywalker lineage is done. I think this is where they wrap it up of that whole deal. Anyways. Speaking of lineages that needs to be wrapped up, I got something here that I've been sitting on for a while, and I don't remember sharing it with y'all, and I don't believe I've shared it with Kyle at all.
No, I haven't. I don't know what you're talking about.
About a bear man.
A bear man?
Yeah. And I can't remember this. So if this sounds familiar, let me know. Let me hear about this. Listen here, Philly. It says, I live in Utah, and a few months ago, I had seen a couple strange creatures in a span of a few weeks to a mountain, to a month, tops, rather. I want to make this post mainly about the one that confuses me the most. It confuses me because I can't really find anything online that resembles this thing. So I live up in some foothills below a mountain. And just to get an idea, I don't live in a developed city. We are just, for the most part, surrounded by wilderness. So I get to see deer just about every day. So like I said, I had seen a couple of strange creatures. At this time, I had only seen one. Since that time, I was being very observant. It was probably about 8:30 in the evening, maybe 15 minutes until the sun would go down. I was scanning the rocks, trees, and bushes with binoculars. I focused in over a fence of a house, and that's when I saw this thing. There's a series of trees behind the fence, which almost gives the appearance of a forest. And I stared through my binoculars and saw what I can only describe as an almost black-looking bear. When I first looked at it, I could only see half of its face and one side of its shoulder. I could not make out exactly what I was looking at, so I just continued to stare at it through the binoculars. After staring for what was maybe a minute or so, I noticed it started to come forward. The reason I say come forward is because it didn't appear as if it was walking. Its upper body didn't make any movements that a walking human would make. It came forward, and at this point, I could see its entire face with big muscular shoulders and on each side of its body. It was staring directly at me, and I feel it came forward so I could get a better look at it. Now, its chest and down I could not see because of this white fence that was covering it. Although I could see the face, I could not make out exactly what I was looking at. From the eyes down, it looked so strange. I saw what was like a circular, lighter-colored shape for a mouth and a smaller black dot for a nose, and that's about when it turned its head. Because when it turned its head, I realized that it resembled the head of a bear. The only difference between this thing's head and a black bear's head is that it had a stubby or very short snout. Said, I also guess that it had ears that would look exactly like a bear's ears. And if I had to guess the height, I would say around 7 foot tall and very wide. Let's say between 2 and 3 foot wide, which basically fits how most descriptions of a Sasquatch are. People would probably say that this was just a bear, but like I somewhat stated, it had the posture of a human with human-like shoulders, be it on steroids. It stared directly at me as I started at it. I wasn't exactly scared because it was light out and I knew that there was no way this thing would hop the fence and reveal itself to the rest of these homes. So after getting a good look, I went inside, feeling a little uneasy. I don't quite think this thing is flesh and blood, though, because I don't see how it would get into someone's backyard, especially during the daytime. Also, now when it came forward to be in front of the tree, that of course it was hiding its upper body, it didn't make any walking movements in the upper body. At least none that were noticeable. So,
what the heck did they?
It sounds like a short-faced bear, or it almost sounds like a, when they're describing the Bigfoot, it having a short snout.
Right.
This thing actually has a bear face. It doesn't have a Bigfoot face.
Right. It has a face of a bear.
A face of a bear. Now, when they're talking about not making any movement, just because you didn't see it lumbering, you know, uncoordinatedly behind, if that's even a word, uncoordinatedly behind the fence.
Sure, it is now.
It is now. Doesn't mean that it wasn't smoothly walking. I mean, you know, like we see people all the time. Maybe people's gait is just a little smoother, especially if they're used to being in the woods. They're not stepping heavy. You know what I mean? They're very cautious as to the way they walk. They're slipping around and this whole deal. But the idea of seeing something that's bear-like, but that big, 7 foot tall with 2 to 3 foot wide shoulders. Of course, you look at 2 foot, 2 foot's pretty wide, but 3 foot, a 36 inch shoulder to shoulder is a pretty good sized critter at 7 foot in height.
It probably makes sense though for a bear.
But could it have been?
This I is can't say question. That I'm familiar with the way bears walk, and if it's different than the normal walking movement of a human, I'm not an expert.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is with this whole deal is that they couldn't see from the chest down, right? How do you not know that maybe that was the? It's not standing. Okay, what I'm trying to get at here is as I'm stuttering through this, where the fence was to the back of this property. Let's say there was a ridge of dirt or something right up behind the fence, right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
And so at that distance, you're looking at a 6 foot tall fence. Well, 6 foot tall on the inside of the yard side. On the backside against that fence with it elevated behind a little bit of a hill, it may only be 4 foot tall.
Right.
Yeah. So a 5 foot tall animal standing up on that ledge would look 7 foot tall looking over. And the thing, I'm just saying it would be, look, the face, it sounds like a bear.
It does.
It does sound like a bear. It sounds like, I'm not saying that that's what they saw. I don't know. It's very strange. But the idea of using, like saying it's so big, I don't know. It's just kind of hard for me to be like, because
a bear bug. Most, bug bear.
Yeah, I mean. The bug. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know.
It's a bug bear sighting.
Yeah. Nonetheless, the bear man.
Right. Well, check this out. This is totally unexplainable. It says, hello, Kyle and Cam. I've got a story for you. I've been wanting to send in for a while now.
Yes.
I love your show, and I think you two guys are hilarious.
Hey, thanks so much.
So this happened to my son when he was 17 years old. We lived in New Mexico at the time. My son, Cody, was riding along with his friends, Drew and Alex. They were driving in Drew's truck, and Drew was the one driving. It was night, and they were heading to Drew's house. Now, Drew lived out in the country, so the road they were on was isolated and surrounded by desert. In fact, the whole area is flat and mostly made up of dirt. As they were driving along, they see a man standing in the middle of the road. So Drew slows down, and they all expect the guy to move off to the side. The guy doesn't move. He just stands there. Drew slows down to a complete stop. The guy is standing just outside the light from the headlights. He's wearing jeans and some sort of long sleeve t-shirt. They couldn't make out the features of the guy's face, but they could tell that he was facing them. Now, nobody moved for a few seconds, and the kids start to talk about going around him, but aren't sure if they should pass by this guy or turn around and just go back the other way. Suddenly, the guy drops to all fours and starts running towards the truck. All the kids start screaming, and Drew slams the truck into reverse and floors it. Now they're going backwards on this dark country road, and this guy is chasing them, Cam, on all fours. And most alarming, he's keeping up with the truck. Now Drew goes faster, and finally the guy drops out of sight. Drew turns the truck around. They all came back to our house immediately. Now, I was in the living room when they came running in. They slammed and locked the door and went tearing up the stairs up to Cody's bedroom. Now, I went up there to see what in the hell was going on, and this is when they told me the story. I've never seen these boys so pale and so frightened. They were completely freaked out. Now, this happened on a Friday night around 8 p.m. These were kids that normally would rather be anywhere except home on the weekend. That weekend, they stayed at our house the entire time. They didn't go out at all, and they only left because they had school the following Monday. It took a month before they ever wanted to go out at night again. They would go anywhere during the day, but at night, they usually just gathered at our house. Now, after a little research, they all agreed that it seemed like this thing was a skinwalker. Even to this day, if I bring up that night, Cody and his friends will get really quiet and look scared. It took a long time for them to get past it, and they still think that talking about it will make it come back. Thanks for everything you do, Emily. So this is just a mother of some teenage boys.
Dude, no.
And she, you know, from her description, she's like, you can tell she's a good mom. You can tell that they have a house that's open and like lots of the boys like to stay over and hang out. And, you know, I grew up with similar situations when I was a boy. But she said she could tell that all three of those boys were not playing around. Like when they came home, they were scared. They were pale. So whether they saw a skinwalker or not, whatever they did see, it frightened them. And that's what we always talk about on this show is whether somebody sees a ghost for real or they think they saw a ghost, or whether they saw a shadow being, or they had an hallucination or a dream about a shadow being, the result is the same. You are transfigured, you are changed, you are affected by your encounter. And I think this is just another one of those. These boys, whatever they saw, it scared them.
Imagine just seeing anybody drop down. What is that video? There was a video of a Russian girl that was, you know, was raised by dogs or whatever that they showed.
Anna. That. Yeah, okay. I remember that. I remember that.
Well, then they show a clip. It's been on lots of social media showing another girl that can actually run. Looks like she can actually get down and run like a dog or like a, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah.
That is such a disturbing sight that if I had the ability to do it, I would do it to like kids, your boy's age, just to freak them out. But the idea of seeing someone drop down on all fours and run at you like that, man.
We used to have to bear crawl in football practice. Yeah. It was horrible.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing that for fun.
I still have to bear crawl now on the mat. We have to do them for warm-ups. Yeah, and I'm getting mad about it. I'm like, what are we doing?
Do you remember that lost footage video that came back years ago?
Was a dude in the ghillie suit?
Yeah, it looked like that it was a werewolf up in like
Michigan. Or dog man or something.
Wisconsin or something. Yeah. That guy, I kind of think of that when the guy was doing it.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, these guys are going pretty fast back in reverse in their pickup truck, and this guy is keeping up with them. I don't know.
Yeah, that's, dude, that's creepy.
Creepy story. And this always happens like out in New Mexico or something.
Well, yeah. I've got you something here that comes from North Carolina. Lon just posted. And what caught my eye about this was the fact that we were talking about this not long ago. This is a copper-colored Bigfoot encounter.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, do
an
tell.
Listen to this. DB and a friend who was a taxidermist by trade were hiking near Mills River in Henderson County, North Carolina. Now, this occurred in October of 2017 on a game trail along a ridge on Mills Knob. The pair had walked for almost 20 minutes or so when they came to an open cut in the woods. They began to hear loud crackling sounds, which they thought was a small herd of deer moving down the ridge and breaking tree limbs. They took a position above the trail and were well hidden. They wanted to see the apparent deer as they moved down the trail and near them. DB and his partner were on a rock outcrop about 10 foot above this trail. As they waited, they began to hear heavy footfalls, as if a large biped was swiftly walking towards them. To their shock, an 8-foot-tall Bigfoot walked directly below and past them. The creature had 5 to 6 inch copper-colored scraggly hair covering its entire body. The face was very ape-like in appearance. It was making heavy grunting sounds and seemed to be in pursuit of something. It then moved off the trail and down the steep ridge. As they watched the creature, it suddenly stopped, turned, and looked in their direction. The pair was terrified and ducked close to the rocks. They assumed that it had recognized their presence. After 20 or 30 seconds, it continued its way down the ridge. DB and his friend stayed motionless for several minutes, hoping that the Bigfoot would move off and away from their location. DB's friend, who was in his late 70s and had hunted in that area all his life, turned to DB and said in a serious tone, "I didn't know that they were gorillas in North Carolina." The pair slowly descended from their perch and swiftly made their way back to their vehicle. They rarely talk about the incident, and DB's friend has recently passed away.
Wow.
So, there is a copper-colored Bigfeets right there. 5 to 6 inch. Look, that's a close, that's a very, very close encounter of the Bigfeets, right?
No, I agree.
I mean, that's, you. To beat.
Oh, sorry, that's the predator. Wrong sound effect, folks.
He's over here hitting buttons. I'm like, no, no, it's scary enough, bro. Look, let's jump in, take a quick break. When we come back, I have some tales that Kyle's really going to enjoy about giant insects. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Here we go. This is something I was talking to Kyle about. He's glanced over here at my computer screen because he knows what he's looking at is giant Japanese hornets.
Oh, my God. I've seen these things, man. These things are the size of like an iPhone Plus. I cannot imagine because hornets, man, they pack a lot of power, man. Yeah. You've been stung by a hornet. They're terrible. Yeah. I can only imagine one this big would really hurt. When I was a kid, we used to have these things called Pespis wasps. Or they're actually known as, what do they call those things? Like tarantula hunters or something. Tarantula
hawk, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. And it's a giant, like, wasp-like insect. And I've never been stung by one, or I don't even know of anyone who has, but they used to terrify me as a kid. You'd see them every once in a while. They lived in the ground. There wasn't, like, a hive of them. They were, like, solitary. Like, you would see one, right? But, I mean, you would buzz by your head. You'd be like, oh, gosh, you know, run through the field.
Yeah.
And yeah, apparently these things killed tarantulas, which I don't even see those anymore.
So they did a good job.
Yeah, they did a good job. And I was just listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about how, like, insects in general, their numbers are declining. Like, I think not just the bees, but insects in general are
declining.
That's
not good.
And they were saying how it's not good. But and in my mind, I'm thinking, good. Who wants mosquitoes? Who wants these wasps around? But, you know, I understand that it affects, you know, everything down the chain. So, but yeah, go continue, please, with these Japanese killer hornets.
You remember you and I first got to talking about these, and we were blown away when it was showing people that had been, like, people actually die from these big bastards stinging them.
Oh, I remember when we were kids, there was like a threat. I remember coming on like the news that African killer bees were going to move into Texas.
Well, they're here.
And we're going to be, that's it.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
They're here and nothing really happened.
If you go down through South Texas, I'm sure they're still there. They were always killer bee boxes, like were mounted up to fence posts and trees. And they had all this stuff because we were under attack by the killer bee swarms. And it was ways that they would come in and take over other hives and kill off other honeybees.
I was scared that they were going to turn on humans. And
oh, yeah.
There was always these stories that
we were led to believe that.
Right. If you accidentally messed with a killer bee hive, that you were toast. Like, they would just sting you to death.
Yeah. That's what I was led to believe as a small child, that if you ever saw them, like, if you you would never know. It's a roll of dice. Like if you open something up, it could be honeybees or it could be African killer bees and you were dead. Yeah, and I remember thinking about that as a kid.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to die from bee stings, you know, and how terrible that would be.
The same when I was a kid, everybody thought they were going to die of AIDS. And like, yeah, like the disease hardly even exists.
Yeah. And well, and it's just the same as the Cold War. Like we were always under belief that we were going to be bombed by the Russians. And remember, we had to hide under our desks.
Yeah.
I don't know what good that would have done, except maybe make it easier to find all the bodies in one room. But I mean, literally, like we would have to do all these, run out in the hallway and hide. You know, we had all this crazy stuff.
I was hoping it was going to happen. I was going to become like one of the Wolverines and I was going to get like an AK and an RPG. And
remember the old movie, The Ruskies?
Yeah. I remember
that. That's a great film too. So, okay. What we're talking about with this Japanese hornet, if you haven't seen it, I would highly suggest everyone right now on their smartphone or their computer, wherever you're at, pull up Japanese hornet, 3 or 4 centimeters in length. Now, because we're talking about, we're just used to seeing wasps over here, you know, and even like red wasp or yellow jackets or even a ground hornet, nothing is as big as this crazy thing. Now, they say that they can grow, get a little, this isn't, that's not even the biggest. The Asian giant hornet is the biggest. It's 5.5 centimeters long with the wingspan of almost 8 centimeters.
No.
Yeah, that's how big these nasty critters are. When you start looking at them, first of all, they believe the Japanese hornets can fly as fast as 25 miles an hour.
That's handy.
Right? Of course, it's going to sting you. If you look at it, I'm trying to see if I can find a spot here where the greatest thing is they are extremely aggressive. Extremely aggressive.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah. Oh, here you go. 20 to 40 people are killed by giant hornets every year, including the Japanese species. And it says one particularly terrible year saw 44 deaths and 1,675 injuries from giant hornets.
What in the?
Yeah.
Do they build like nests on people's homes?
I think they're all on the ground.
Like farmers just out, you know, jacking with their fields and crops, and next thing you know, like, there's a hornet, and this just giant bird-sized hornet just starts,
Anaphylactic shock's what kills you. That's the venom that they pump into you.
Amazing.
So it destroys like your kidneys. It, you know, if you get stung enough, that's what ends up all your blood. It destroys red blood cells, kind of like a snake bite, you know, and spider bites, things like that. They usually travel in swarms. And that says here, the good news is
they usually travel in swarms.
Yeah.
Handy. That's handy.
They're known to work together as a single unit when they attack. Now it does say here, hey, look, a single sting is rarely fatal. Yeah. Great news though, because they travel in swarms. So yeah, you're not going to get a single sting. They said in 2017, there was a woman in a wheelchair was attacked and killed by Japanese hornets. And for over 50 minutes, she had more than 150 stings.
That poor woman. Can you imagine being stuck in a wheelchair and they're just getting lit up
by
giant hornets for 55 minutes?
They said the firefighters on the scene were trying to get to her and they couldn't get through the swarm of all of those damn hornets.
Could that woman have done in her life to deserve that?
Nothing. To deserve that.
Now, this might be a new something to replace the electric chair or the gas chamber for like these criminals that are on death row. Wouldn't it be interesting to put them in a cell with giant Japanese hornets?
And just release the hornets on them? Dude, yeah. This man's crazy. Okay, listen to this. A single Japanese hornet can kill 40 honeybees per minute.
They can kill people.
Yeah.
I mean, a honeybee, it's like the size of a fingernail. Yeah, if they kill humans, you can definitely kill a honeybee.
It says a swarm of 30 can take down a colony of 30,000 in less than 4 hours.
Man.
Yeah. Now, of course, there's all, like they always talk about, how do they kill them? The bees would swarm the hornets and like, you know, buzz around on them or whatnot to overload their heat.
The hornets would swarm the bees.
The bees to fight back will overload the overpower them, things. Different stuff. There's a bunch of different ways that they can have it do it. But the reason that I bring all of this stuff up, of course, is because imagine if there were giant insects much like that, but of all different species, not just of like we've talked about with the giant dragonfly.
Yeah.
Now, because we know that it was a thing. We know that there were certain giant insects millions of years ago. And it's believed because of the oxygen content was what caused the insects to get large.
All animals.
Yes. And so that being said, you have to kind of start thinking of stuff this way. There was a fella named Marco Polo. Gisotti. Yeah, Marco Polo. No, Marco Gisotti, an Italian fella, 32-year-old doctor. He was actually on a flight from Rome to Boston, and he reported all this. Now, you can go and find this, I believe, on Cryptozoology News, but a fellow went and actually interviewed him in Boston. And Gisotti actually says this. He goes, look, I know it's hard to believe. He goes, but I know what I saw. And he goes, I've never seen anything like this. It was a big, big insect, and it was out of this world. So he goes and he has a set down with this fellow named Michael, and Michael does all this. And he gets Gisotti, he gets Marco to sketch a drawing. But anyway, they go to this restaurant and have a little meeting. And he said that he could tell, Michael could tell, that Marco was nervous, was very, you know, didn't know really what to say, that it had really affected him. And so Marco goes, look, I fly a lot, right? And honestly, he goes, I hate flying, but when you're a doctor, you got to do what you got to do. He said, you keep up with updates. There's always conferences, continuing education class stuff that they go and check on. You know, there's always these things. And he goes, now this was a different type of flight. He said on this plane, he goes, the food was bad. And he's like, you know, the air wasn't going good. You know, he's like, it got hot in there, this whole thing. But he was like, you know, in this line of work, you know, it's just what you have to deal with. You travel. Sometimes you get good flights. Sometimes you get bad flights. So he goes into talking about this. And Michael says, hey, look, during my line of work, when I start interviewing people, you'll see strange behaviors from people. And a lot of them you can tell that are strange are because they are fabricating a story.
Right. Okay.
And a lot of people are acting a little strange because they are reliving the story in their mind and it's not fabricated. You know, like you could always tell, like you always laugh about, you can tell when your kids are lying to you and when they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
You can, if you interview, just like officers and investigators interview people enough, a good investigator could tell without anything if you're telling the truth or not, because they know people so well. And the same thing with a man that does a lot of interviews, same way. He's going to be able to tell, you know, when something's a little funky. So what he gets down to and gets out of Marco is that Marco was trying to wrap his mind around how he had been at 30,000 foot flying over the Atlantic Ocean when a giant beetle attached itself to the plane outside of his window.
Like, how big are we talking?
All right. Marco goes on to say, look, man, I got like a panic attack during this whole thing. And he's like, I don't even get them. He goes, nothing. But he goes, I get a panic attack. The two people sitting behind me get them. The other people, he said, there were eight other people total had seen this creature attach itself out here. And he goes, and I know panic attacks aren't contagious. They just start freaking out whenever they see this whole thing. He said, the weird thing about this encounter was it felt like time had stopped.
This is like Twilight Zone, the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy sees the yes. monster on the wing and it's tearing up,
yeah.
throwing stuff into the engine.
He said he's sitting in his row, sitting in the chair. Everything's good. And he goes, I start feeling uneasy. I get this uneasy feeling before I even see the creature. And he said it again. He starts talking about the Oz effect, how it felt like time had stopped. He goes, I don't know how to even explain it. He goes, and that's when I heard this wham outside the window. He goes, we all turned our heads over there. And he goes, and I see it. He goes, this thing had attached itself with this claw-like structure on its back legs. He goes, there's hairs and hooks and some sort of adhesive pads on the claws of this thing that stuck to the window. Okay.
Yeah. How big is it?
Yeah. I'm going to get into that. You're going to like this. He goes on, he said, it then unfastened its legs from the glass and his green metallic body opened up and two wings rolled out like a rug. They were translucent and I could see it full of red veins. It looked like tree branches or a leaf. The thing glided for about 2 seconds, then started flapping its wings slowly. It was incredibly slow, not like a regular insect where you can't even see the shape of its wings. Said its eyes stared at us, looked like a red flashlight. He said the sighting, I would say, lasted less than 50 seconds. He said, after it flew away, he said, those 10 people, all the 10 people that was all that, he said, all began talking about what had just happened. So he starts going into this stuff. Basically, what he ends up getting into is he believes that the wingspan of this beetle was about 2 feet, and this beetle was bigger than a basketball.
Are you?
And it was at 30,000 foot, attached itself to the outside of this plane.
See, and an interesting thing is, as he talks about it flying or wings moving incredibly slow.
Yes.
This is a common thing with things people see in the sky, whether it's a flying griffin, whether it's a pterodactyl or pteranodon or thunderbird. People say, I saw it flying, but it looked like the wings were hardly moving at all or not at all.
Yeah.
Everything is always slow.
It doesn't make sense. Unless it's not of this area. It's not of this plane.
And you can imagine you're in a passenger plane, I mean, hurtling through the air, a jet, and this thing has just attached itself.
Just comes flying up and slams into the side and attaches itself.
That's crazy.
The idea of just sitting there chilling, looking out the window, reading your paper, reading your tablet, whatever you're doing, your magazine, and this thing just brrr, boom. And I just picture it attaching to the window to my left. Where I turn, I'm like, what in the heck? Oh, my God. It's a basketball-sized dung beetle with wings.
Maybe that's what brought down that Malaysian flight. That
was a giant beetle?
A swarm of giant beetles that just ripped the fuselage in half.
Well, what I'm curious about is this, is all the pilots that aren't allowed to talk about what they see. It's always unspoken. I wonder if there's more than just, an air quote, UFOs that pilots see. If they see stranger things than just flying objects.
Yeah, it's possible.
And nobody ever brings it up.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Now, here's something that I had never heard of, but I think you're going to enjoy. The Ozark giant centipede.
No, I'm not familiar with this.
I don't remember ever hearing about this.
A Mongolian death worm. That's about the only giant insect I'm familiar with.
Yeah, that's a legitly cool insect. If for whatever creature
if it's
that
real,
is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The name alone, Mongolian death worm. I've always thought that would make a really good name for like a burrito. Like if you were going to have a burrito or like a, you know, or like a hot dog, you're going to like have a restaurant. Like I serve the Mongolian death worm, you know, like real hot and spicy. So apparently in 1860, this happened at Jimmy's Creek in Marion County, Arkansas. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The story goes.
Arkansas.
In Arkansas. My bad. In Arkansas. In Jimmy's Creek, Yimmy, that they caught an 18-inch long centipede. 18-inch centipede. Mm. This was the giant Ozark centipede, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that they had it displayed in a drugstore, but that during the Civil War, when all the stuff come pushing and whatnot, that it had actually been lost during all this time. Now, there was another thing that happened there in this area that claims that there was a giant centipede attacked a young boy and that it was that bit his leg and that the leg legitly rotted off, got infected from this giant centipede bite.
Ugh.
Infected, and the boy lost his foot and had to live, of course, the rest of his life with one leg and the other one bit off by a damn giant centipede, which is a great story. If I have to lose a leg, I hope I lose it to a giant centipede
not
story.
Me. No, I'm not in down with hornets, beetles, centipedes. No.
There's another case in the Ozark areas about a boy and his brother, older brother, that were all out hunting. And they claim that not only did they come upon a giant centipede, that they startled it or something. Rather, they drew its attention and that it came after them aggressively and that it was attacking the boy, the younger brother, and the older brother had to kill it. And that when they shot it and brought it, like got
shot it with guns?
They shot it with guns that it was about 3 foot in length.
Jeez.
So a 3 foot centipede.
So you're this giant Remington Steel level of freaking centipedes attacking these boys very aggressively.
Yes.
And they had to shoot the thing with firearms.
Yes.
Wow.
Now there's
I'm not familiar with any of these tales.
There is another sighting that took place in Sebastian County, Arkansas. Where the guy, this was a bow hunter, Philly. This guy was bow hunting, and they said that he was hunting in an area that was extremely rocky, like a big rocky cliffs and outcrops and all this, and he was on a little ridge, and he had hunted this area, I guess, before, so he was slipping in there. And he said he heard something over in the rock, so he made his way around from where he'd first gotten into this cropping, and he come upon what looked to be a deer on the ground, just rolling around, just struggling on the ground like something had bitten it. So instantly, you know, like, because, you know, you've seen mountain lions and bobcats attack them, things like that, so you can see what's going on. The story goes is he got up to it.
And this whitetail is being attacked by a giant centipede?
Yes.
Holy cow.
He said, here's the thing. As he got up there to it, he said something was strange. The deer's legs and the deer's head wasn't moving, but it was sliding along the ground. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the guy moves up there. The dude bow hunting moves up there. He's like, what in the hell is going on? He said at first he thought it was a big snake dragging this deer, inching away. He said then he noticed it wasn't a snake, but some sort of massive centipede. Now, he said it was extremely dark in color, what he saw. It had hundreds of legs and hundreds of armored segments, and it was pulling this deer carcass along the floor by its hind quarter and had a part of its tail and was dragging it. And when they asked, now get the hunter, of course, freaks out, right?
Yeah.
He can't believe what he's seeing.
Who could blame him?
Yeah. And he says this thing comes up to a rock pile and starts really working to drag it up over the rock pile. He said around this time, as he's following it along, walking and watching, like, what in the hell is going on? He said this giant centipede somehow notices, and I'm thinking maybe it's impact from the ground, the vibration. You know, lots of animals can, like, sure. What are those called? Sand lions or whatever, ant lions that dig in.
Right. Looks like a funnel in the ground.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they feel all this vibration, whatever it is. He says that as he closes in on this thing to get a better look at what he's seen, this giant centipede that's dragging a deer, it lets go of the deer, backs and raises up off the ground, like rears up.
Like a cobra.
Yes, to look at him. He says that he felt like he was being watched. And here's the bad thing. He only had his bow. He didn't have a gun. Right. He didn't have anything. He goes, I wanted to shoot this thing. But he goes, my fear was it wouldn't kill it. I couldn't penetrate.
Yeah, then you're in real trouble. Yeah.
Because I've not shared with you the size that he claims this thing was.
You got to have a heavy arrow, friend.
10-footer. He says this thing was probably close to 10 feet long dragging this deer. So you have to imagine if it's 10 foot in length, the width would probably, let's just say, be 12 inches in segments.
Yeah.
As it went through there. Yeah. He said that he got out of there after it reared up this whole thing. He backed out and hauled ass. And he said, I've never been back over in that part again. I won't go.
I don't blame
him. Over in there. So these are all stories. Like, we don't really know if they saw him because there's not a lot of, but first of all, how would a centipede get to be 10 foot? Like, what branch of, you know, what would allow it to be that big? My question is there caving systems of the things they found in these caves? Could there possibly be insects that are that big hiding down in there? There's also a story that allegedly takes place during Vietnam. During the Vietnam War, there was a group of like five-man groups going out, right?
Yes.
Moving out, going down through there. They claim during there that one of the guys, what it is it was a fella told this story to his son-in-law, and his son-in-law actually relayed this story that says that he goes, man, me and the guys were out. We were on patrol. It was dark one evening. He goes, we came across a group of spiders.
Don't.
All right.
I knew this would come up.
Yeah. He said that their bodies alone were the size of dinner plates.
Oh, my God.
He goes, the total span, including the legs, were probably 30 inches around. And he said they were everywhere. They were on the creeks. They were all around the water, up in the trees. He's like, there was a large group of these giant spiders. And he said, we started shooting them. And he said, we would kill some. He said, you'd hit some and they would run off. They would just absorb a 223, this NATO round, and run off. Just boom, boom, boom.
It would look like the scene at a Predator when he's got the minigun and he's just opening, Max just opening up on the forest. That's what me and my patrol would look like. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. On all the spiders.
Oh, I can't imagine that. I know there's a giant species. I'm no entomologist, but I know that there's a species of giant, like, bird-killing spider that lives in Australia.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
You know, Vietnam's not too far away, so I could totally imagine it's probably the same species, if not something similar.
Well, Rick West was on the TV series Monster Quest back in 08, and Rick West is a spider expert, okay? And they had sent him into Venezuela near the Orinoco River along the Colombian border, and they were going down there looking for giant spiders. That's the whole thing that they had gone down there for. And so he goes down there. Of course, you got to get locals. And like we've talked about, the locals seem to know, like they've either encountered these things, especially in those areas. Like you get down into any part of that deep jungle, there's no telling what's down there. So he has a guide, and this guide's name is Juan Carlos Ramirez. And Juan Carlos and old Rick get out there, and they start pushing around, and they go to this village called San Rafael. And in this
village. This is in Venezuela?
This is, yes. Okay. This is down along, this is in the Venezuelan jungle along the Colombian border. Yeah,
big shout out to Jose Altuve.
Here we go.
He's Venezuelan, isn't he?
That dude's awesome. Altuve's a beast.
He probably knows where these giant spiders are.
He probably grew up smacking them with a bat whenever he was a kid.
That's why he's so good.
That's why he's so damn good, yeah. And there, in that village, there was a villager come forward that said as a child, he had seen a giant tarantula. And he said whenever he was a kid, he saw this thing come up out of a hole. You know how they build like those holes, like those, what are those, wolf spiders, whatever it is. He said this thing come up out of a hole and attacked a small dog that was out there outside of the village, grabbed it and drug it back off. And he said its body, the body alone was the size of a basketball, what come up out of that ground.
Jesus.
And he said, given its legs, when it would rear up, it was the size he was as a kid. It was that tall.
What is it about spiders that they just look so creepy? Like, you know, like hornets and stuff, they're scary.
Yeah.
Because of what they can, the pain they can inflict on you, and they descend upon you and they attack. And from that, I get that. But spiders to me, I'm not in fear of the pain they can put on me.
Just in fear of the spider.
They're just scary. Yeah, they're just creepy looking. And like all you got these guys that are like, oh, my pet tarantula. You want to see my pet? I'm like, that's not a pet. It's not a pet.
You're just keeping it captive is all you're doing.
I remember they had a guy like come to our school and, you know, you could hold the snake or whatever. And he had like a pet tarantula. It's like, you want to hold it? I was like, no, it won't bite you. I don't want to hold it. I don't want to be anywhere near it. Like when we take Luke to the aquarium, like when you get to the spider section, yeah. I just kind of quickly go through that part. I'm like, no,
not even looking.
Meet you on the other end. Yeah. I'm getting some dipping dots.
That's right. I'm not looking left or right. I'm just moving my way through.
I can't stand them.
I thought you'd be a fan of the spider as much as they hate insects as much as you do.
I appreciate what they do. I appreciate the job they do. But I just don't want them things getting me.
Well, you're going to like this. Going off,
I'm not liking any of this.
Yeah, going off its body size, Rick, the spider guy, right? Rick goes, man, if I'm going off the size and knowing the proportions laid out, I would have to say the fangs that are on the front of a tarantula would be roughly between 6 and 9 inches in length.
Oh, my God.
On a spider that size.
It's like a dagger.
Yeah. Now, Rick was led, like, you know, in more in the village, and they were talking about it. And Ramirez, his guide, the guide alone was like, hey, look, these people know what they're seeing. Like, there's no reason that they would start making up stories for this whole thing, the whole deal. They said they understand what a monkey looks like. They understand what all the animals out here look like. They're not going to mistake it for a giant spider. Like,
I agree.
If they tell you. They see a giant spider. I mean, deep they're going to see it.
Right. Deep in the jungles, that's where this thing would live. And if the locals, I mean, they've probably grown up with these things. So it's to them, it's normal, right?
Well, and spiders are a normal thing because you think about all the thatch huts. They're going to be hiding in the roofs and the walls, everything in those thatch huts, eating all the insects in that jungle. So when you build a hut or you build your home, it's full of spiders. It's going to be full of them out there in the jungle. It's just the way it works. So these people are used to being around spiders and seeing them on the reg. So when they tell you they've seen a big one, they even in one of the villages that Rick and them visited for Monster Quest, they heard a story about a child that went missing, and they claimed that child, nobody I don't know had, you know, like proof, but they claimed that the child was actually taken by one of these giant spiders. That's what ended up happening. And you think about all this stuff. There's all kind of the idea of there being a spider big enough to like kill chickens, you know, out there in the, cause there's people were saying that, look, that these tarantulas were killing chickens. Like you were talking about, they were killing. We don't know, because how fast do things get devoured in the jungle? Like if it was to die and you couldn't find it within 30 minutes, you may not find it ever. Like,
yeah, I agree.
All the other insects come through, whatever's out there. Like, I mean, it processes the jungle. Mother Nature has a way of processing stuff extremely, extremely quick. Sadly, though, like we talked about on that whole Monster Quest episode, they had no definitive proof. They never came back with any giant spiders. But there's a story here that I really, really like. And this comes from the Baka Pygmies. What's interesting about the Bakas are they are the ones that always help or were first, you know, I guess spoken to and all that are known for Mokele and Mbembe.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Are these the same Pygmies that Justin Wren helps out?
Their water wells? They might be, but I don't know. I'm sure that it's probably part of the tribe, you know, of the whole thing, but I don't know exactly where the Bakas are compared to Justin's, his group of where he goes, but I'm sure it is. I mean, if they're Pygmy, then yeah, they're helping him with this whole deal. So the Baka were approached, right, about these giant spiders. Somehow they came up and they were talking to some folks and they said, hey, look, and they were people in the villages had seen them within the last 10 years, had seen giant spiders. And they said that they loved to, this is what the Pygmy said, that these spiders love to conduct or to build construct their hides, I guess is basically the best way of saying it, near Pygmy villages. And they said they don't really know why. I guess maybe it's because there's more insects, follow more people because there's cooking and, you know, and there's water and all this and all this. So they like to build webs, build all this stuff around. The Pygmies claimed that they had even seen these spiders kill dikers. So they had taken down these tiny antelope eaten them and drug them off out in there. Now, they say that these spiders that they are talking about are powerful enough, have enough venom in their bite to kill human beings. One spider, so they're like, if you get attacked by one, it's not like you're going to bite it, kill the spider, and move off. If it gets you, you're pretty much dead. Like, that's it. And the Pygmies kill them. If the Pygmy finds them and they see those giant spiders, they attack them. They snuff them out. So undoubtedly, there's been a history with these Pygmies and these spiders. Now, Chibofi is a word that they call giant, and it actually transferred. Chibofi stands for giant spider in their language, okay?
Okay.
And they go, now you can always tell whenever you're getting to giant spider area, when you start seeing eggs that are single eggs, not the egg thing, but single spider eggs are peanut sized.
Ugh.
And that's how they know you're getting near the giant spiders of these areas, as they look for these nests with giant peanut sized spider eggs in them. And then they talk about this whole deal and about like the colors and how you can tell. And these eggs will start getting brown or tan. And that's how they know. They go from white to very brown before they mature. So, you know, they're getting ready to pop out. You're like, okay, we got to go ahead and get rid of this quick.
Yeah.
This whole thing. So in this same Belgian Congo interior, you have to jump back to 1938. And in 1938, there was a fella named Reginald Lloyd and his wife Marguerite. And they were putting along back in the day through there. And they say they were explorers or close, but they're putting along down in their car on this road. Probably not the best of roads, but you got to imagine what it's like driving down through the hot ass Congo, putting down through there in the 1938 Oldsmobile, right? An old Plymouth.
Yeah, making your exactly. way down through isn't there. The Belgian Congo is the same place where that guy saw that huge snake.
Yes, exactly.
Right? That's
when he flew
of.
Over it and saw the 50 or 60 footer. And I've also done stories about giant frogs. There's a lot of stuff down in the Congo. Mokele and Mbembe. That's why I've started tightening this circle into the Congo, is a lot of these things are, they always talk about it being like the land time forgot. It's like what it was like millions of years ago, still in that area.
I'll never go.
I will never know what it's like down there unless one of y'all post a video of it, because I'm not going.
Nah, sounds horrible.
So Reggie. Reggie's driving along, just having a good old time with his wife, and they see something come out. Now, when they first spot this thing coming out, they thought it was a monkey coming out in the road, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. What is this? So they just slow it down. And when I say slow it down, they're within 20 foot of it. It's up here in front of them. So then they were like, wait, what? Or is it a little kid? They can't tell because they look like maybe it's somebody crawling. About that time, they, you know, and when I say this, is it doesn't take like minutes. This is seconds. You know, you've seen things where you're like, what is that? What is? And your mind goes to three or four things before you can clearly make it out. So Reginald and his wife are sitting there, and they said at that point, it's racing through their mind. What is going on? What is this animal? Boom. They say a tarantula. It's not a full tarantula, but a tarantula-like spider comes out into the road. It's so big, Margarita keeps watching it. Reggie turns around to get his camera. The thing scurries off like it knows they're there. both of them agree that this thing had a leg span of around 4 feet. So again, basketball sized body is what it would have to be. Maybe even a little bit bigger. So you're talking maybe trash can lid size body with 4 foot of leg sticking off of it. Because it's awful hard to go by the legs. Because, look at Daddy Long Legs. Their bodies are tiny.
Right.
Legs are extremely, it's awful hard. I just go through, because everyone says it's tarantula-like is what they saw. Now, this happened in 38. So you have to go into World War II again, like we've always talked about. Now we're in Papua New Guinea, all right? Mm-hmm. I need 5 good players to help out Papua.
Right.
And on the Kokoda Trail, or track is what it's talking about, which is a footpath that runs through the Owen Stanley mountain range in New Guinea. It's 60 miles long. All right. So that's a nice hiking trail is what that would be. But there was a series of battles took place during World War II in the early 40s, 42, 43 in the Pacific, between Australian forces and Japanese forces, fought like hell in this whole area. Well, during that time, there were stories were coming out about giant spiders and basically other kind of mega insects and megafauna, but that area specifically was about giant spiders. So there was an Australian cryptozoologist couple named Peter and Debbie Hines. And back in 01, they were, of course, was serving as an Australian army, that the father of one of Debbie's friends comes forward and starts talking about this, telling a story of what he encountered while he served in that region. This is what he had to say. One day, he had to take himself off into the scrub to answer the call of nature, all right? While thus engaged, he noticed he was crouched down next to a very large cobweb, not the classic fishing net sort, but the fine, snow-white, cottony stuff that spread all over the ground and the tree trunk. His eyes followed one way, then the other. Seems it was very extensive, like 10 to 15 foot either way. Now, that's a big web.
And he's sitting right in the middle of it doing his business.
Yeah, he's copping a squat going number 3. Then he noticed the spider itself, only a foot or so away from his face. If you ain't got to drop mud now, you're really going to when you see that spider.
I can't imagine.
It was a real horror. He said the body, talking about the thorax and the abdomen, he said was the size of a small dog or a puppy. It was colored jet black, and its legs were thick and hairy, but not as long as the classic dinner plate tarantula type spider. He said, because of what we're talking about, leg length, it was shorter. He said this thing had more body bulk than spread. So it's a very massive, bulky, powerful spider. He said at that point, he backed out very, very slowly.
I can imagine.
So he had walked in, dropped, his trousers, and looks up, and now you're staring face to face at a giant puppy-sized tarantula spider.
And this is in Indonesia?
This was in New Guinea.
Yeah, another place I'm not going.
Another place, there's no reason to go.
You can look. Keep the rope in to yourself,
uh-huh.
Or the Indava birds, mm-hmm. the spiders. I'm not about any
You don't
of
need
it.
That?
No.
Yeah. Well, there is another one. There was a guy called in on Coast to Coast AM several years ago that was telling a story about how his grandfather was near Port Moresby in New Guinea during World War II. Same thing. And encountered such a giant, monstrous, he said, spider that he pulled at his machete and started hacking it to kill it. And he said that this thing was shiny instead of being hairy. It was shiny and emerald green in color like that beetle, and was from its face to its ass was 3 foot long.
Oh, no.
Now that sounds like Lord of the Rings spiders,
yeah.
Right? As you're getting into those. There's another report, though, that this one comes from Uganda in the 1890s from an English missionary named Arthur Sims. And he was down there exploring the area of Lake Nasai. And he said they were taking some treks down through there with a lot of the natives. And they said that they got caught up, one of them got caught up in a bunch of webbing, like spider web, so strong that they could barely break it. They're pulling and pulling in this giant spider web and can't break it. So they're trying to get him cut out of this, right?
I'm with you.
During this time, Mr. Sims says that he looks up and two giant spiders, he says with the leg spans of around 4 feet, come out and jumped upon the two guys that ended up getting caught in that web. One was caught and the other one got caught trying to get him out. All right.
Did it kill him?
And bit them both before the author, the missionary, could get his gun out and start shooting, okay?
Yeah.
Moments after Arthur made the shot and they run off, the two men that were caught in there said they're all their extremities bloated and swole because of the amount of venom that was injected in these men. They went to extremely high fevers and died within minutes of being bitten by these things.
Or stung. Do they sting or do they bite spiders?
Bites. It would be bites, yeah, because they don't have stingers.
I don't know.
Yeah, it would be a bite.
I don't have any.
They would inject the venom when they bite.
I don't have anything to do with spiders.
So that is a handful of encounters that people have had, deadly encounters on some, with giant spiders. So yet again, there is something with this giant insect, as you get down into the jungles, which I'm not surprised. But if there was a species of giant spider, you would think now, well, I'd like to believe now, but I don't know that it's changed much compared to even in the 1930s or the 1890s down there. I mean, you still, yeah, there may be more people moving through there, but it doesn't mean that you're still going to come across these things, because it wasn't like people were coming across them all the time to start with.
Yeah, let's take a break and we'll pick up back with this dialogue after the break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Yeah, man, when you're talking about giant insects, giant spiders and things like that, they're still discovering new insects and things every year in the Amazon or the deepest parts of the Congo, yeah. or like you were talking about Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, that whole area. So I definitely think that there could be species of giant spiders or centipedes or beetles or ants or whatever that science is just unfamiliar with.
I need to look and try to see if I can find some encounters with giant ants, because I always think back to like Ant-Man. Remember when the big ant's helping them and it's running around? It looks like a dog.
What's the classic movie Luke watches? Them, is what it's called, where it's giant ants.
Well, and like I was going to talk about, but a lot of people talk about the camel spiders in Iraq.
Oh, I forgot about those.
Talk about those. And you'll see some pictures, they are pretty good sized. You know, I mean, they're pretty good sized. But you still have a lot. There's several accounts of military men saying that they have seen, like what they show pictures of and what they talk about is one thing. But like there's guys that's like, yeah, you'll see outliers every now and again of giant spiders, like great big ones over there running around. And I'm just wondering, like, I wonder what would stop it. Like, is it a certain species? Or, you know what I mean? Like, we always laugh about, like, with catfish. They say they'll pretty much grow to fit their environment. So the larger the area, the more food they get, a catfish will grow and stay. Fish are unique that way, where they'll grow and stay certain sizes, certain fish, right, to fit their environment and all that.
So a small tank, it's not going to grow very big. You put it in a much larger tank, the fish will get bigger. Right.
And I'm just wondering if spiders are somewhere, if they are somehow that way, because it would be like a tarantula. You would think we would have some sort of record of a tarantula if they were record size, like monster 4-foot tarantula. You would think somebody would have found maybe a fossil, maybe have found a dead one, maybe had killed one and kept it. And we would be like, there is a species or used to exist of giant tarantula. Or is this tarantula the same species as a normal tarantula? It just somehow has grown due to whatever it eats or wherever it lives to fit its size.
Can you imagine the feeling, though, of being caught in a web and then getting rolled up like one of those garden spiders and these things descending upon you?
Well, I can't imagine the feeling of getting in like caught in a web. Like, you and I used to laugh about this all the time, especially like when we would go spring turkey hunting, is because you'd slip out there to set up decoys at night. And how many times you get spider webs in your face as you're walking through those little. Imagine now getting into one you can't break free. Like, no, I can't imagine getting into one so thick that you can't get through it. And then you look up and 2 4-footers come crawling over there at you like, dude, I would like to believe that it's a joke just because it makes me, like, it's all a farce because it makes me sleep better because I don't even want to think about if that was real.
Dude, I'm a grown man, and I still, like, in the summer when I see I'm measuring homes or something and there's giant, like, garden spiders on there, no joke. Like, I start trying to figure out different ways because I'm not messing with those things. I don't like them. I get mad at the homeowners that live there. I'm like, you just let these things colonize all over the outside of your house? Like, not in my world.
Not
like,
playing.
I kill any spider I see.
Yeah.
I told you there's the giant one that went underneath our dishwasher. Never seen it again. I have no idea. And yeah, when I brought that up, like all kinds of listeners started sending me stuff. I don't know, man. Spiders to me, that's just, it's just not my thing. If you put me in a room with like a rabid coyote or a spider, I'd rather be in there with the coyote. Something about fangs and stuff, I'm okay with getting attacked, you know?
Yeah.
Spiders,
they can sneak up on you and you can't hear them and they're always mad.
They'll bite you when you're dead asleep. A spider will bite you. I mean, my friend Mark, almost had lost his arm to a brown recluse.
That's bad, man. I can't believe
it. All jokes aside,
man.
I mean, seriously, the guy had like 4 surgeries. His arm is still atrophied and messed up, and it's been like over a year and a half.
Over a year now, yeah.
From a brown recluse, just bit him while he was
asleep.
And that's
a foreign spider, too. That wasn't even an American spider that
bit Italian.
Him.
Yeah, he lives in Italy. But they're here in Texas. Ugh. Yes. I hate those insects. Oh, also, real quick, during that segment, you were talking about the pygmies, and I brought up Justin Wren, and I'm going to put links to it in the show notes. But his cause for building water wells for these pygmies is called Fight for the Forgotten. Mm-hmm. So you can either Google search Fight for the Forgotten, or I'll put links to it in the show notes. But it's a good thing. You could donate as little as $5. And apparently when he moved in and lived with these pygmies back in 2011 for like a year, they were still slaves.
Yeah.
And he's been able to free them, not only from their owners. They had no water wells. Now they've built, I think, like 68 water wells. And so, just through his work and donations from people, there's 25,000 pygmies that are flourishing now that were not just as simple as 8 years ago.
They weren't even allowed to own land.
I know. Because of their small stature and stuff, I guess they were just...
They weren't considered people. They weren't considered humans.
Yeah, people would... I mean, literally, slavery is still going on in the world, unfortunately. But he's able to help. And if you would like to donate, like I said, little as $5. Some people like to do the little angels for Christmas, you know, you get out of the PD or the mall and you pick out an angel and you buy him a gift. If you want to do something similar, you can help out these pygmies and Justin Wren. And it's a good cause. He also has what's Lovato up there in Oklahoma City? The guy that he trains with.
Raphael.
Yeah. That's, I couldn't think of his first name.
Yeah.
They have a program too for kids that are being bullied and things like that. And you can donate to that as well.
If you don't know who Raphael Lovato is, he's a bad man.
He's a bad
man.
So
is Justin Wren. Justin Wren's a bad man too.
Yeah.
Like he fights and I don't know if Justin's going to get to fight anymore though. Cause he's got like a parasite or something in his brain or something. Like Justin's been fighting a lot of that stuff that he got while he was in the Congo.
Malaria. He's had multiple times,
4 or 5 times. He's got malaria, I believe.
I'd like to talk to him, and see if what he knows about giant spiders.
Yeah. And Mokelia Mbembe.
Yeah, what he could tell us.
I think I'm going to get you to go down there with him next time he goes.
I'm not going down there.
Because if you heard him talk about the story, he needs to tell the spider story about the one with in there where their little hut that they were staying that got on his wife before they got married. It's one of those ones you'd be when like, it comes I'm to, not going in there.
When it comes to tropical places, I'm not about it. Now, if it's a cold place, I'll go there. I mean, I was just thinking, here I go.
Here we go.
I was just thinking that the other day when it was like 16 degrees out and it was cold and I was outside. I was like, oh, it's cold. But I was like, you know what I like about winter? There ain't no insects. There ain't no spiders.
No spiders out here now.
That's
the same way with snakes. You can walk around wherever you want. Them snakes going to be moving real
slow. See, snakes
slow.
Don't bother me. I have a friend, we have a mutual friend, Josh. I mean,
he's not a fan.
Terrified of snakes. Snakes to me, although they're not pets, so don't be confused. I had somebody write in one time. They were talking about how reptiles are just like dogs or cats. I'm like, not really.
We're just going to have to agree to disagree on that.
I don't have an iguana that's looking for drugs at the airport or... You don't have a bearded dragon who's looking for narcotics.
That's why you got to like a cat better than a dog, because a cat won't narc on you. A cat, them cats, just they ride or die. A dog, you can teach that son of a gun to find drugs. Like them dogs are tattletales.
I was always a dog person until about 3 years ago, and now I think I'm more of a cat person.
Because you're getting old and grumpy, like maybe. A cat.
Well, we had to adopt.
You're more of a goldfish person.
We adopted Hazel Cat, and now we got Gizmo.
Oh, she hates him.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So Hazel Cat, which was our Skeleton Studios cat, which just showed up as a stray and we started feeding her. And then, like I said, she started hanging out in the studio and she would like to listen to stories of giant cats in the UK and things. Those are some of her favorite stories. After a while, when we moved studios and just before that, I just started taking her home. And so now she lives at my house full time. So we travel a lot for travel baseball. So we're out of town all weekend, and poor Hazel Cat, she gets stressed out when we're not at home. She pulls her hair out. You could just tell her anxiety is bad. So she even knows when we start packing, we start getting all the stuff together. She knows we're going out of town for a baseball tournament. So my wife's brilliant idea was to get another cat. So she went down to the rescue and got one for free. Just a baby, a male cat named Gizmo. And, the plan was that Gizmo would keep Hazel Cat company and she wouldn't be so stressed out when we went out of town. Turns out the mother of all backfires, Gizmo and Hazel Cat fight like crazy. Gizmo will not stop jacking with her. Of course, he's just trying to play, but Hazel Cat doesn't want anything to do with it.
She has no time.
So now the problem's worse. So now we have two cats that we have to like crate and separate when we go out of town. But yeah, I think I'm more of a cat person. They're a lot easier to take care of. That's for sure. I think I liked dogs better before I had children because my dog, when I got home from work, you could kind of play with the dog, take it for a walk and stuff. Now I got kids to take up all that. So
yeah,
I don't need just another dog because the kids aren't going to clean up after it. They're not going to be shoveling in the backyard. No. They're not going to take it for a walk. So think I'm more of a cat person. Yeah, I'm getting ready for the next episode of The Mandalorian. I had no idea that The Man in the High Castle has come out, so I'm going to have to check that out. Let's bring up our sponsor again, Native Deodorant.
I love it.
You can go, what was the promo code?
Expanded. You get 20% off your first order using the promo code EXPANDED.
There you go.
Dude, Cam, this stuff is awesome.
It is. It's legit.
I love it.
And I'm glad that they sponsor Expanded Perspectives. They allow us to continue doing what we're doing. Cam, speaking of doing, what do you got planned for your week?
To be honest, I really don't know what I've got going on. I got a little sampling to do this week, and then the rest is, I don't know. Oh, I take that back. I got to spend some time in front of the computer in my office this week. I got to do a bunch of stuff for my insurance and all that. It's that time, and I really don't want to have to do that.
Better get started on your Christmas shopping.
That's overrated.
Are you just the Amazon way, or you like to go to the shops?
It depends on, but I used to be, I was strictly going to the shops. I had to go and touch it, and this is what I was getting them. And as I've gotten older, Amazon's more my friend, where I don't even have to mess with it. I go on, I find it,
I'm
boom, boom, boom. Or I say Amazon, anywhere that it, for my wife and my daughter, it's way easier.
I'm terrible because my wife says I'm the pickiest person on the planet to buy for.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally every time she picks out anything for me, I end up not liking it. And I don't try to be that way. It frustrates her to no end because she's like, whether it's a knife, whether it's a clothing, whether it's whatever it is, I have something I like. And if it's not my way, then I don't usually like it.
I'm the exact same way. My wife stopped buying me clothes like 15 years ago. Won't buy any of it. And this is what I end up doing now. When I tell them what I want, I get like generic stuff. Like I may want like something for the kitchen. Like I want a new pair of tongs for my grill. Give me those tongs.
Tong to tong tong.
Like I don't ever get anything big. You know what I mean? Like, cause I don't need anything big because if it's a serious purchase, let me make it for myself. So I know what I want, or I will send them exact links. This is exactly the size. So it's not a surprise. Like I know if I send it to them, more than likely I'm going to get it. This is what I want. This is the size. This is the color. That's right. It. And I love you dearly, but don't go out using your own opinion because so they gave up on that. That, or here's another thing that I really like my birthday's coming up. This is what you want to do? Let's go out and eat. Let's just pick a good spot. Let's go someplace and eat dinner. That's perfect. I don't need a gift. I'm old. You don't have to buy me anything. I don't need anything. If I want it, I got money. I'll go buy it.
Only thing I got planned for this week is Luke's birthday parties at the end of the week. So
yes,
having a roller skating party.
Ooh,
so 80s music. I'm gonna invite the tree man. He's real good at skating.
Oh, dude, that guy was so good.
Remember that guy?
Yes. Yeah. So
every rink, I think, has one where there's like one person who still is into the 70s disco.
Dude, that guy was so good.
Roller dancing.
I got to go roller skating. I ain't been roller skating forever.
I don't know that I can roller skate.
Let's find out. Let's find out. We're going to film it.
Yeah. I mean, my kids always laugh because they're like, you played ice hockey for years. And I'm like, but man, I'm telling you, skating on ice and roller skating is completely different.
Dude, inline skating for me is extremely difficult. I can skate on ice, but on inline skates, dude, I can't hardly do it.
Well, the inline skates are even easier than roller skates, but like the 2x2s, the roller skates with the big knob on the front, dude, I can't.
I used to skate on those all the time.
Really?
Yeah, as a kid, because, you know, we didn't have any of that other stuff for the longest time.
Right.
But, dude, I can't. Inline stuff whoops my ass.
Well, I hope everybody out there has a great week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all. Get a good feeling, yeah.